Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. No one can stop me. I'm the best ever.
Like motherfuck all y'all, Mr. Mike Tyson flow, uppercut all y'all, step into my ring bitches, ding ding bitches, click clack bow bow, bing bing bitches, I'm the dream machine, I mean keen vision, I can see through your scene like clear screens, hear me, to a lion you are just, dear me, fear God, fear me, Siri, us, be by him.
Hello everybody, this is Joe Connors, your host of Anfield Index Legends Podcast, Episode 2. Took us a while to get back, but we're here we are. We are here to talk everything Mr. Iron Mike Tyson. And I got two awesome guests in one corner. I got Mr. Joseph Cousins. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. You good?
I'm all good, pal.
Nice one.
And in the other corner, a returning guest is a huge boxing fan, Hatem Kaddous. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm good, pal. Ready to rock and roll. So we're going to talk Iron Mike today. These guys both wanted to be on. We're all Tyson fans, but I'm going to let my guest do most of the talking, as any good host would. So to start off with, boys, I'm going to start where Mike Tyson was from, where he's, what he's all about. So Mike Tyson was born in Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn, New York is a hard, hard place, man. A lot of people don't make it out of Brooklyn, New York, especially where he was from. Mike Tyson is from Brownsville, Bed-Stuy, New York. A lot of people hear that, Bed-Stuy. Oh, I know that. Yep, you know that from famous people like Biggie Smalls, Jay-Z, Mos Def, Lil' Kim, all rappers who made it out. So, Mike Tyson grew up with basically no father. His original father was Jamaican, never knew him. His stepfather basically rolled out when he was born. So he was raised by his mother. So Cuzzy, tell me a little bit about Mike Tyson coming up, rising to stardom.
Well, it's the backstory is quite typical for a lot of young black American fighters, where, you know, they're coming from a broken home, usually from a sort of ghetto type neighborhood, tough neighborhood. From Mike's, Tyson's perspective, got himself into a lot of crime, you know, arrests, what have you, in and out of juvenile detention centers. Sort of similar upbringing to a lot of guys that I grew up with, although I decided to go on the more sort of straight and narrow rather than get up off. But you mentioned the parentage there and it's also the family's structure, and Tyson's spoke about this himself in like more recent documentaries that sort of played a role in his difficulties as a youngster, you know, as it does. I know guys that I grew up with that have been sort of in and out of youth detention centers and prison, and it's a similar way of being from broken homes and living in bad neighborhoods and what have you. It's a similar thing with Tyson, 11, 12, 13 years old, but then he, I think in his last detention center, I think it's called the Tyrone School for Boys. Is that right?
That is where right.
Where he met Bobby Stewart, who was an old fighter and counselor, and sort of took Tyson under his wing and trained him up to fight. And I think that's sort of the beginning of, you know, of his boxing career, not his career, where he's sort of as an interest taking up boxing. Before that, as I mentioned, a lot of arrests, a lot of street robberies and crime or whatever you. And usually when you get into the system or in the, as a youngster, as a 12, 13, 14 year old in and out of detention centers, it usually, your life usually goes in one direction, and that is, you know, extended prison sentences, drugs, and usually guys like that don't really live a long life. You know, or a prosperous one, or, you know, it turned out to be sort of one of the most successful boxers in the history of the sport, one of the most ferocious boxers in the history of the sport. So it's really a fairy tale story when you think about it from that perspective, or rags to riches story, where he meets this guy in the detention center, and he gets trained up to fight, and then he meets the legendary Castor Marto. So I don't know what Hatem wants to sort of add to that bit in terms of previous to his boxing, his yeah, boxing training.
That's right. I mean, he had no direction. This is a kid who, like you said, Kazi, could have won anyway. He could have been dead at an early age, arrested 38 times by the time he was 13. And then comes along Customato. So, Hatem, you want to talk about Cus?
Well, one thing I will add, though, is that he used to get bullied a lot when he was a kid because of the way he spoke. And, you know, he had that the Tyson-esque lisp. So he was fighting quite a lot. So that's how he became quite a combative person. But Customato is not well known in the boxing. I think he trained Floyd Patterson to the world title. And yes. One of the things when Bobby Stewart introduced him to Cus, he said, right, this is a guy, he needs guidance, but he's got something. And one of the first things that Cus did was appoint Kevin Rooney as his trainer, along with Teddy Atlas. And basically they had a look at Mike Tyson and his past and thought, well, the best way to keep him is to keep him out of trouble, is to keep him active. So they got him into the amateurs. So he did well in the amateurs. He won the Junior Olympics. I think it was 81 and 82. I think he holds the record for the quickest knockout ever. Cus and Kevin Rooney had created this technique that Tyson had, which is the bob and weave, or he calls it the peekaboo, where I don't know why I'm trying to demonstrate when I'm on an audio podcast. But you can imagine if you're covering your hands with your face and you're ducking low, because he wasn't the tallest heavyweight. I think he was 5'11 in his prime anyway. And he's basically just bobbing and weaving with his hands down low and then peeking up outside and then unleashing his power. So they got him into the Olympics, and in the Olympic trial, unfortunately, he lost to this guy called Henry Tillman on a decision, and he never made it to the 84 Olympics. And it was at that point that Cus thought, well, we should get him to go pro. In terms of
he goes pro in 85.
Yeah.
And then Cus, he had, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, yeah, he goes pro in 85. Go on, sorry. And Cus kind of, I think Cus dies in 85, I believe.
He does. Yeah, he does die in 85. That's right. And that's basically when Tyson's trouble starts.
Yep.
Because, you know, Mike only knows trouble. Mike knows fighting. This is his life. So his first big nationally televised bout is in 86 Houston Field in New York. You know, he knocks a guy out real quick, and then he starts making a name for himself. So his first title fight was in 86. So this is all moving real quick for this guy. And again, this is a young man who has no direction in his life. You know, he's got people all over the place telling him, Mike, do this, Mike, do that. And he fights Trevor Burbick. Cuzzy, you want to talk about that?
What I found just leading up to the Burbick fight, just looking through the stats earlier today, what I found quite remarkable was that he had about, I think it was 15 fights he had in 1985, which is amazing. So you imagine a fighter these days going pro at the age of 18, and having that many fights. Like, he's fighting like every 3 weeks, he's fighting and knocking people out. So he's built up a reputation of just being really active. But there was a lot of criticism as to, you know, the type of opponent he was fighting. He's going through these guys, like, most of them are knockouts, and really early knockouts as well, leading up to the Burbick fight. And so I remember watching this fight, And a lot of people, although he had this sort of ferocious reputation that he built for himself, a lot of people didn't really, you know, believe the hype. You know, they thought, well, you know, he's not really fought anyone, you know, too special. Now he's in with a champion, we'll see what he can do. And it's funny because I wasn't really a Tyson fan yet. I was more leaning towards Trevor Burbick. I think Burbick was Jamaican, and sort of naturally I sort of led towards the sort of the Jamaican guy in the fight. But for all that doesn't know, my sort of family is from Jamaica, so family all huddled around the TV, and you know, everyone's rooting for the Jamaican. It wasn't long until there was a complete 180, and everyone started rooting for Tyson. Such was the amazing performance. And, you know, it's the speed of Tyson, the ferociousness of the punches, and it's the knockout of Burbick, and the way he's stumbling around the ring, trying to get up, falling over. It's an amazing sight. And when you think back on it, or you look on YouTube clips, it's really hard to comprehend that this is a 20-year-old youngster, right? Just up and coming against a seasoned vet, the world champion, and he's laid him to waste in that fashion. It's very rare that you get that now. If you can imagine someone like Anthony Joshua, for example, I don't know, fighting a seasoned world champion and just absolutely pulverizing them in double quick time, that would sort of give you a bit of an impression of what it was like back then, but it was pretty amazing. And that sort of set the scene, really, for what was to come.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we haven't seen a heavyweight like that, that kind of buzz, that kind of come up like Tyson in a very long time. I mean, you had your great champions even after him, but none of them ever had that kind of buzz. I mean, Tyson had everything. He had outstanding hand, he had the hand speed, he had the coordination, he had unreal power, unreal timing. And early in his career, he did have defensive ability. Now, he might have went away from the peekaboo style you spoke about, but he had everything. I mean, this guy was probably born to be a fighter. So at this point, it's basically 87 is Tyson mania. I mean, he is the guy. Everybody knows him. So he goes and, you know, he becomes, I think he fights Tony Tucker and becomes the first heavyweight to own all three major belts. And then after this, we'll go to 88. 88, he fights Larry Holmes, knocks him out. And then he's just running through people left and right, left and right. Then he comes up against Michael Spinks. And I don't know if you want to talk about that, Hatem.
Yeah, so Michael Spinks was, he had beaten the previously unbeaten Larry Holmes, or unbeatable Larry Holmes, to win the title. And there was a bit of controversy over it because Larry Holmes was going for the famous Rocky Marciano record of 49-0, and he got robbed in that fight. So, and then they fought again. So Michael Spinks was seen as potentially Tyson's toughest fight. And, it was weird because we live in an era now where we have, illegal feeds for fights, or Sky TV or BT Sports or Box Nation and stuff. Sky TV wasn't around then. So for us to watch the fights, I remember listening to this on, Air Force radio. If you saw we used to get the highlights or the recorded and shown on ITV the following day. So I used to remember at 9 o'clock in ITV, having listened to it on the Saturday night, ran down the stairs to watch it. And if you saw the look on Michael Spinks' eyes as he's walking in, and the guy his eyes were, he was bricking it basically. He was shitting himself. And that was one of the things, that's one of the things Tyson had, is that he would beat people before he even got into the ring. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but Bruno's second fight, Bruno did that crossing of the chest thing about 30 times on the way to walk in. People were defeated. I mean, I think it was 91 seconds, the Spinks fight. And I mean, I can't remember how much it worked out that he earned for that fight, but I think Michael Spinks took one shot. And Tyson's famous shot was the right uppercut, and decided that's it. You could see him. He sat up when he was on the ground. He sat up and thought, you know what? I'm getting paid for this. Fuck this. I'm staying down. And basically, Michael Spinks never fought again after that. And that was the effect. Yeah. That's the effect Tyson had. I mean, I don't even think Burbick fought after after, because he was just talking about that famous knockout. I don't think Burbick ever fought after that. It was the effect of that.
Yeah, he was basically that's the height. That's the height of Mike Tyson. Nobody was going to beat Mike. Everybody thought this guy's going to be the next Marciano, undefeated record, this and that. And then his troubles came. I mean, sure. The guy he can never get away. He couldn't get out of his own way. He's basically had cocaine problems his whole life, amongst other things, partying. But this was when it kind of his marriage and the divorce to Robin Givens happens. And then on top of that, his contract's being fought over. And Don King, if anybody knows anything about Don King, if he's anywhere near you, you're probably fucked personally.
Yeah, ask Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, exactly. He was an absolute mess. So he has all this going around, all this shit going down. And it's his life is kind of falling apart internally, but nobody really knows this because at the time, you know, you hear about the divorce and all that stuff, and like, oh, okay, well, this guy's still a great fighter. But then 1990 rolls around, and he fights Mr. Buster Douglas. And at that time, he was a huge, 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 huge favorite. Even, I mean, like, I don't even think casinos had odds on this fight. Cousy, you want to talk about that?
I think only one casino had odds for Douglas. We talk about 1988. I think is a really key year because a few things happen. As you mentioned, he gets married to Robin Givens,
who actually at the time was quite,
and that was a sort of roller coaster. She was a superstar at the time in terms of being a model and an actress. He was 21 years old at the time. She was 22. If you're a Tyson fan listening to this, you've probably seen the documentaries and you know about sort of trials and tribulations of that particular marriage. And at the same time, you've got Don King sort of waiting in the wings. He fires his management, and I'm not sure if Robin Givens or his mother-in-law has anything to do with him actually sacking his management at the time. And these are the two guys who, the names escaped me at the time. You guys probably know the names of the two, but these two were recommended by Cuss himself, and also his trainer Kevin Rooney, who had been training him up from his amateur days. He fires them all. So he fires the management and he fires his coaching, and then he divorces his wife, and then he gets with Don King. So all that happens in 1988. And then, you know, at the time we don't know because we're just, you know, focusing on the fighting, and we're seeing him knocking out people like Spinks in double quick time. Fights after Spinks, he would have destroyed guys, you know, really, really easily, seemingly. And then he goes into the Buster Douglas fight, which is, you know, on paper, just a mismatch, and you know, everyone's expecting it to be, you know, an easy fight, you know, a routine defense. He doesn't train properly. Guys that sort of that know him have since said that, you know, he didn't look like he was in shape at all. He said himself that he didn't train properly for the fight. Whereas Buster Douglas is his dream, you know, it's his dream fight, you know. And he trained his ass off for the fight. So I couldn't believe it because, you know, back then as I think the fight's in Tokyo, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't know what time of the day it was in UK time, but I didn't watch the fight live. I woke up early in the morning and switched on the teletext to see what happened, and I couldn't believe to see the headline that he lost. And for everyone, if you remember at the time, I think it was the same day that Nelson Mandela was released from prison as well.
Yeah, it was.
It was a matter of two huge occasions, completely different. You got Nelson Mandela being released from prison after 27 years, and Mike Tyson actually lost the fight. I think he was champion for over 3 years, and 3 years to me then seemed like forever. When you're young, 3 years seems like a really long time, and it seemed like anyone would beat him. And it was a massive sporting shock, massive shock. Couldn't believe it. And eventually saw the action, saw the highlights. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It looked like Tyson physically, but boxing style and sluggishness and whatever, it just didn't look like him. It just like a completely different fighter in the ring in terms of his output. To see him get knocked down, because I think it's the first time he'd ever been knocked down in his career, amateur as well as pro, I think. Never seen him get knocked down before. He'd knocked down in the canvas, struggled to get up, looking for his gum shield before he got up and counted out or stopped by the ref. Couldn't believe it. Massive, massive shot.
Yeah, it was easily one of the most shocking upsets in any kind of sports history. I mean, that 42-1 odd, it's crazy. I mean, he didn't have it, and he clearly wasn't in shape. But you know, after that, he does come back and he wins some fights. I think he beats Razor Ruddock twice, and then you think he's back on the ascend, and then the rape happens. Yes, that is the alleged rape of Desiree Washington, Miss Rhode Island. You want to talk about that, Atom?
Yeah. So a couple of things, but like he got back and he was scheduled to fight Evander Holyfield in November, I think, and because of that rib injury, he got a rib injury, or so they say. So then, he basically was off the boxing. Who knows if he had fought Evander that first time, whether he would have been in that situation where he's at a Miss. I think it was a Miss Black USA pageant. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Pageant.
And so this Desiree Washington, right? So the background to this is 2 weeks, I think 2 or 3 weeks before, one of the Kennedys, I think it was William Kennedy, some junior, I think, had just been acquitted of rape. And like all the evidence was with him. So you could, all the evidence was pretty much condemning him, damning him. But he managed to get off that. So all the feminists were up in arms. So this whole Desiree Washington thing was happening in a sort of atmosphere of the feminists protesting about the rape stuff. And I mean, she met him during the pageant, and then she invited him to his room at 3 a.m. Like, now I'm not, like sort of condoning what she says happened or he said happened. But she invited him to his room at 3 a.m. and then allegedly they had sex, and then she came up with this, he raped me charge. And I mean, Tyson's defense was possibly one of the, I mean, if you read about it, like the lawyers that Don King provided were some of the worst one of the worst defense cases ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't focus on the lack of evidence. They didn't focus on the fact that, that Desiree Washington had previously been, She'd already had one count of prior history of false rape against a teacher. They neglected that. The facts were incomplete. The jury, like, somewhere Tyson was advised to, like, live up to his bad boy image. So they basically found him arrogant. And I mean, even though they had it documented that she was a known gold digger, the jury paid more attention to his bad boy image and basically, sent him down. But one thing though, he was offered a 6-month probation. If he pled guilty. But he said, look, I'd rather spend the rest of my life in jail. I'm not pleading guilty. It's something I didn't do, which is fair enough. And to this day, I mean, look, putting aside my love for Mike Tyson, I mean, I think he was a victim of circumstance with the Kennedy stuff. They needed a conviction of somebody. And obviously, Kennedy being a powerful white guy was never going to get convicted. If I'm bringing the race into it, Tyson, easy fall guy.
Sure.
There was rumors he was wanting to split from Don King anyway, because he was getting well pissed off with Don King, and he wanted to go back to I think one of his co-managers had died by then. I think it was Jimmy Jacobs, and I think he was left with Caton, and he wanted to go back to Caton and ruin. He wasn't happy with the way the training was going, so there's a lot of rumors he wanted to quit. And Tyson basically he wanted to leave Don King, and Don King got wind of that, and there's rumors that he stitched him up on the court. I don't know this, because again, when he got jailed, he came out and joined up again with Don King, which pissed me off quite a lot. But, the world, the media wanted a conviction. He got sent down for, I think it was 6 years, was it?
It was 6 years, and I think he only ended up doing what?
Three with probation.
Yeah. With probation. Yeah. But he had a sex offender registration, yes. Which is just embarrassing. So,
yeah.
So, Cuzzy, how do you feel about Tyson's rape case with Desiree Washington? How do you feel how that all went down?
It's a difficult one. At the time, you lean towards your sporting hero. You think, well, for me personally speaking, I think, you know, heavyweight champion of the world, women falling at his feet, why would he need to rape someone, you know? And so look at it from that perspective. And more of a, well, this needs to be absolutely proven before I'm going to believe it. And thing is, he gets convicted, which is rare, really, when you think about when you look back and think about, you know, the amount of sort of sport personalities or celebrities or rich and powerful people or men that have been accused of, very rarely did actually get convicted. So it, to me, looking at it, it seems as if what convicted him was a couple of things, really. You've got the story of his chauffeur at the time that corroborated her story about, you know, the shock she was in after the incident, whether it was a ride back to her place or wherever. I'm not sure the full details, but that sort of being sort of in a sort of shocking sort of state after the event, that was corroborated. And I think probably more tellingly was the physical that the nurse gave off after the accusation as well. She had sort of a physical at the hospital to sort of check evidence and what have you. And what they said was is that her injuries it was in keeping with someone who had been raped. So is whether, you know, it's whether she had rough sex. And to speculate, you could think maybe, you know, they had rough sex. She changed her mind in the middle of it. She didn't like the way it was going and decided and said no. Who knows? Only the two of them would know. But it seemed as if that sort of, you know, having injuries in keeping with being raped, the corroboration by the chauffeur as to the shock state she was in after the event, and also in the court case as well, where he gave evidence and came across, when he was cross-examined by the prosecution, he came across as arrogant, and, you know, and basically the jury didn't like him. So the picture painted of him as being an abusive, arrogant bully. I think that the jury actually went with that side of the story and was found guilty on that. Whether it was enough, whether it should have been enough, you know, to be under reasonable sort of doubt, be convicted, you know, by reasonable doubt, I don't know. But because I don't know the full details of that case, what is sort of a bit surprising is how short the case was. When you think about it, it was 3 weeks, I think, the case was. So his defense couldn't have been the best in the world. But whether he did it or not, he's always maintained sort of vociferously that there's no way he did it. It was a false accusation. He said that from the very beginning. And, you know, he could have pleaded and got lesser time, you know, didn't do that, fought the case, ended up serving 3 years because of it. And since then, in some quarters, you know, he still maintains a fan base. Some people just refuse to believe that he did it. Others, that, you know, he got convicted. And so he did. I, at the time, was of the former camp, you know, not believing that he did at all. Now I don't know what I think about it, to be honest. I can't lean 100% one way or the other, to be honest. I'd like to believe that it was a false accusation. I didn't know what Hatton mentioned earlier with regards to the fact that she had falsely accused, was it a professor or a teacher? Did you say Hatton?
Yeah, teacher. Yeah.
Teacher.
I didn't know that actually. So that throws some, that throws a bit of doubt on there, doesn't it? It's a tough one for me, really. I couldn't say that that she's lying. She's a gold digger, and you know, I couldn't say that for definite. And then I couldn't say that, you know, he's definitely done it. So it's a tough one. And I'm not one of those that if you've been convicted, that means you must have done it, because you would know that you know that people have been stitched up well and truly over the years. So,
yeah, no question. There's probably all kinds of people in jail who didn't do what they say they did. And being that it's a rape case, it's such a touchy subject, but
yeah,
you did bring up a good point there. Only him and her know what happened. So, and after being paroled from prison, Tyson wins some, I would say some pretty easy comeback fights, Peter McNeely, Buster Mathis. And that's the thing. He, you know, he's been in prison for a few years and he's still popular than ever. He comes out and it grosses 96 million worldwide, the highest ever for pay-per-view. People still want to see this man box. Then he gets a, defends his WBA title against Holyfield. So you got Holyfield 1, which ends in Tyson being TKO'd in the 11th round. And that whole fight, he was upset and complained about the headbutts, which will be a precursor and a
foreshadowing to Holyfield 2. Hatam, you want to talk about Holyfield Tyson 2?
Yeah, so me and my dad stayed up until about six. I remember that fight quite well because, as I mentioned before, my dad's a huge boxing fan, did the Rumble in the Jungle. He took me to see Tyson fight Bruce Seldon a few years before when he won the WBA title. Long way to go, Vegas, one round. So we're massive Tyson fans. So we stayed up. I remember that boxing card. I mean, now a lot of boxing cards are shit anyway, like the support belt. There was no support fights. They were just rubbish. And there was, I think, some women boxer fighting on it. And the fight didn't really start till 6 a.m. So you can imagine we're sat here waiting till 6 a.m. And I've never really liked Holyfield. I know he's a great cruiserweight, but he's a dirty fighter. But then a lot of fighters are dirty. You just got to get over it. So I was disappointed that Tyson had lost the fight before. But if you look at it, Tyson, again, once they did the post-fight analysis, it looked like that Holyfield got his tactics perfect again. And Tyson, continuing his decline since he sacked Rooney, didn't have an answer. He was just a plodder. He was just, he'd completely forgotten his bob and weave and the peekaboo. He'd completely forgotten all the head movements. It was easy for Holyfield to stop. So I was kind of thinking, well, I mean, you could see that Holyfield was headbutting in the first fight, but I mean, it happens, these things. So in the second fight, I think, it started off first round fairly even, but you could see Holyfield again shoving his head into Tyson's face. Tyson got cut, I think, early, I think. And then he just kind of lost the plot. He bit once, and I think the referee was at Mills Lane. He took 2 points off him, which, I mean, that's quite impressive. To be honest, I thought a bite would mean that you'd get disqualified completely, but he gave him a chance. But by that time, Tyson lost it. In between the first bite and the second fight, Holyfield is again rubbing his forehead into Tyson's cut. No excuse. I'm not excusing it for any way am I making excuses for Tyson doing what he did. And then he bit him again. He got disqualified, brawling in the ring. Me and my dad were fuming. I mean, it was like 6 a.m. There's like, we sat there basically trying to stay up to the fight and it was nothing. Couldn't do about it. Just couldn't believe it. My dad went to sleep immediately disappointed. I was just like shocked. Said, like, Tyson's been one of my sporting idols. So like the rape thing's a gray area. Some people do, some people don't. Believe exactly as because you said, but this was just like, okay, I'm going to judge him how he is in the boxing ring. And I kind of felt a little bit let down by him doing it. I mean, he got effectively a yellow card for biting someone's ear the first time. And you thought, okay, and in a normal corner under the stewardship of D'Amato, Jimmy Jacobs and Clayton and Rooney, all of that the old regime, that would have calmed him down in the ring. But you look at the two, Don King's, cornermen that he appointed, hopeless. They didn't calm him down. They just wound him up in the corner. If you watch that fight, they're saying, yeah, he's putting, Tyson's complaining to his corner going, yeah, he's headbutting me. He goes, yeah, don't worry about it. Instead of telling him to calm down and stuff, they're like egging him on. Yeah, it's wrong. He came out for the bell fuming as soon as he did it again. He bit a chunk. It's that iconic scene where he spits out a chunk of his ear onto the floor of the MGM. Was it the MGM? I can't remember. But, yeah. And he got disqualified. Shame, like humiliation, banned from boxing. They withheld.
Yeah, he lost his. Yeah, I mean, Nevada took his. He couldn't get a fight in Vegas.
I
mean, that's brutal.
They took three. I think at the time, they could only take a certain. I think it was 10% of
yeah,
the.
Yeah, they took 3 million of his 30.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it was just, I mean, I, as a massive Tyson fan, I felt left, let down on a sporting basis in the ring because of that, because I kind of thought, well, it's like spitting at football for me and, biting and boxing again, similar thing. There's no excuse for it. I mean, it's just a bitch way out, basically. I kind of thought he got frustrated and he kind of resorted to the days of when he was he kind of had a flashback to how he was back in the day street fighting and he just basically took it to the street and he got disqualified and he was banned for. I was ashamed because like Holyfield gave it all of this, spiel. I mean, Holyfield, when you look at the greats, when you rank the boxers, will always be ahead of Tyson because of that. He beat him twice. And that's the shame about it because I think I still, as we'll probably talk about later, fully focused Tyson beats anyone, to be honest. But yeah, it was disappointing, man. I mean, because I don't know if you, I think this was in the early days of Sky pay-per-view as well, so.
Yeah, it was, yeah. So, Cuz, how do you feel about both them fights?
I missed the second fight. I was the first fight. I mean, the build-up to that fight, the first fight was really good because he won the title from Frank Bruno.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Joe, but Frank Bruno is sort of the biggest heavyweight boxing personality in Britain.
Yeah.
He's our Joe Lewis, so to speak. Frank Bruno is the most popular British heavyweight. And
Limited ability.
fantastic shape.
Yeah.
Really good physique. Absolute sort of everyone loves Frank, right?
Yeah.
And Frank had gone for the title a few times and always sort of bridesmaid, but could never actually get the thing done. Always sort of came up against the champion and lost. And the first fight against Tyson, he got knocked out. I think it was the fifth round, was it? Fifth or eighth round? I'm not sure. When Tyson went to prison, the various versions of the title was being won. I think Lewis lost. Did Lewis win a version? In the title and then lose it to Oliver McCall, and then Oliver McCall fought Bruno, and then Bruno managed to beat McCall on points.
Yeah,
and he didn't go. I think it was a WBC.
Yeah, one thing though, in the splitting of the fights, Buster Douglas, who beat Tyson, like lost to Holyfield in like three rounds, an embarrassing surrender. Yeah, embarrassing, yeah, surrender, destroyed. Man.
Yeah, absolutely destroyed by Holyfield.
Yeah.
So Tyson beats Bruno in the rematch. So that was big in Britain. That was a big hype fight. And then you had the lead up to the Holyfield fight. And I had stayed up to watch that fight. I was at my friend's, and it was like there's about seven or eight of us packed in the living room, and stayed up all night to watch this fight. We all fell asleep and then woke back up again early morning to watch this fight. It must have been about 5-6 o'clock in the morning. And it's funny because everyone is just knackered, falling asleep. As soon as the fighters come out to fight, the main event I'm speaking about, where you're all like full of energy, can't wait for this fight to happen. And we're all Tyson fans, and we all think it's going to be one result, and there's Tyson winning. We're all in absolute shock when halfway through it looks like Tyson's getting beat up. I mean, what the hell is going on? I mean, Holyfield is just connecting with all these combinations, hooks, uppercuts, overhand rights. They're all connecting. And that fight's a TKO, isn't it? That the first one.
And yeah, 11th round.
Yeah, 11th.
Yeah, and pretty amazing. When you hear Tyson talk about that fight, he talks about the headbutts. And when you watch it back, there are a number of headbutts in that fight. Tyson has said that he blacked out like in the early rounds. And when you watch it, he gets a headbutt that cuts him, and then he gets a couple other headbutts. And then as it gets to the latter rounds, Holyfield just takes over the fight and beats him up a bit. Second fight, it was going in the same direction. He had a couple of headbutts. He got cut early, and then he just lost. I mean, he's explained it himself in his documentary. I don't know if you've seen the 2008 documentary where he's sort of narrating it himself, where he says that he pretty much just said, I don't care about the fight anymore. I don't care about boxing. I don't care about my license. I want to hurt this man. He's headbutting me. No one's doing anything about it. I'm going to get revenge. And he just takes a chunk of his ear. And it's amazing that he's took a chunk of the ear and spat it out, and the referee's seen it and docked him points. I mean, it's amazing that he's not been disqualified immediately. Absolutely amazing. Holyfield's jumping up and down, pointing to his ear, and the camera zooms in and shows a chunk of it missing, and the fight still continues. But eventually he gets disqualified, rightly so. And then he gets docked his $3 million and he gets banned by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And which pretty much says that, you know, you're not getting any big fights, because all the big fights are in Las Vegas. If you can't fight in Vegas, then you're done, really. By the second fight, a lot of the mystique for Tyson had gone. When he lost that Holyfield fight, I think that was where the iron part of Mike Tyson had disappeared for me. He was no longer the invincible Mike, you know. I mean, when you look back on it, he himself has said that the loss to Douglas was really the end of his dominance. But I didn't see it like that. At the time, I'm thinking, well, he still is a top fighter. But when he's lost that first fight to Holyfield in convincing fashion, it's for me the mystique and the sort of that aura of invincibility is gone. So by the time the second fight and the biting of the ear and all that, it sort of just added to the fact for me that, you know, he was on his way down. And yeah, that's pretty much signals the beginning of the end, I think, for his career, that him being abandoned and fighting like that.
Yeah, that's, you're absolutely right. I mean, he basically toils for kind of years after that. Drug busts, assaulting two motorists. I mean, he's downright crazy. And, you know, people, not to get into a whole nother tangent, but, you know, the man does have mental issues that people just laugh at sometimes because of stuff they don't understand. He clearly is abusing drugs. But in perfect Mike Tyson fashion, he gets another chance, another opportunity to fight Lennox Lewis, 2002. And he goes on the famous rant.
Yeah.
You know, I want to eat your heart. I want to eat your heart. I want to eat your children. Praise to be Allah. I mean, the man sounds like he's insane, but he does fight Lewis. Hatem, tell me what happens in that fight.
So one thing though, from his transgressions with the assault charge, and then I think he was done for a sexual assault. They couldn't, or he was being charged with again sexual assault. He wasn't allowed to fight that fight in Nevada, I believe. Nevada refused to issue a license for that fight.
That's right.
In terms of the rant, look,
I love the rant.
I think it's the greatest rant ever. I think it's brilliant. And that's the thing is like everybody, you've seen it so many times, whether it's UFC, whether it's boxing, they'll rant in the build up to the fight. Like the two jokers we're going to be seeing fighting soon, David Haye and Bellew, they'll sit there and fight and in press conferences and rant. It doesn't mean anything. To me, it was just a rant. I thought it was brilliant. I want your heart. I want to eat your children. And he launched into this. It's to me like, in terms of, you can say the best pre-fight rant, but it was selling tickets. It's all about selling pay-per-view. People have got to realize that, I mean, you always compare the fighters after the fight with how they are before, and you know how false it is. Most of the time, none of the fighters believe it. It's like when David Haye and, Chisora fought one glass the other. It's like, oh my God, I'm this and this. And then they're hugging each other afterwards. But, I mean, this is Lewis pretty much at the prime of his career. Lewis, now for me, Lewis is a good boxer. He retired, having avenged every defeat he's had. He retired with the titles. I never rated Lewis's style. I found him quite boring. As you can see, if you see the progression from Lennox Lewis to, Vladimir Klitschko, the way they do it is they use the big size to lean on people. So Tyson washed up. Tyson, he'd fought three or four fights before it, including, now Tyson came to England to fight in Manchester in 2000 to fight good old Julian Francis. I went to that. And one of the things about that is it was a big thing that Mike Tyson would be allowed to enter the country in this country, because this country has a ruling where if you've got a rape conviction, then due to that, you know, when we talked about it earlier about him being on the offenders list as a part of his sentencing. So this country has this thing. If you're on a offenders list, you can't be allowed in the country. So special dispensation was made for him to be in the country. And obviously he cleaned his way. He basically fought four bums in the build up to this fight. So, I mean, he second round KO'd that Julian Francis. And then he went to Scott. The paper, which we all hate, had advertising on the soles of Julian Francis's feet so that they expected him to get knocked down. So every time he got knocked down, that scummy paper we all hate, you could see the advert for it. He went on to Glasgow. He fought a guy, beat him in 38 seconds. Almost, I think he knocked down the referee in that fight. And then he fought Galotta, another tainted sort of boxer, knocked him out quite early, fought some. The fight for me that said that he wasn't in any shape or any decent shape was before, when he used to fight quite regularly. So he fought three times in 2000. In 2001, he fought once against this Danish bum called Brian Nielsen. And he struggled his way through that. And he just about crawled his way to a seventh round knockout. I mean, the guy was awful. Tyson Prime would have knocked him out in 4 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever. He was awful. So that led, like, you've got a year of inactivity between Tyson fighting this Nielsen guy and then coming on to fight Lewis, which was June, I think. And Lewis just did the classic thing that he's always done. He leant on Tyson. Tyson pretty much did what boxers do when they've only got left as their power. And he would telegraph his hooks. He would telegraph his uppercuts. I mean, it was horrible to watch. Again, it was a late night Sky thing. I was devastated because, again, what Cuzzy talked about earlier about the Buster Douglas image of him grasping around to get his gum shield off the ground when he got knocked out. This was, again, horrible. He had nothing, man. It was just like, I've got a lot of Tyson videos at home or DVDs or whatever the thing. This is the one fight I will not watch. Again, I watched it. I was just devastated. I mean, I've seen the Buster Douglas a couple of times, but that's about it. But this one I'll never watch again. It was just horrible. It was, I mean, he was broke. He needed to fight. He didn't. Lewis goes on about, oh yeah, my legacy, I'll beat Tyson. Lewis knows damn well a peak Mike Tyson, I'm talking pre-prison, destroys Lennox Lewis in 3 rounds or less. Lennox Lewis couldn't take a punch from Oliver McCall. Lennox Lewis got rocked by Frank Bruno. Lennox Lewis got beat by, who's the other one he got beat by? Hasim Rahman. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he did avenge it. I agree. I mean, but Lewis always goes on about it, and it was just really, he says he needed it. He needed it. If he needs it for his legacy, he needs it. Again, due to that victory, Lennox Lewis will always be ranked higher than Mike Tyson. And when you look at the greats, it's horrible.
It's definitely not. Yeah, it's definitely horrible. It's definitely not right. Cuzzy, you agree with that?
I think when you're talking about that fight, right? As I mentioned before, I love the rant. The rant was great. I mean, everyone focuses on. I think it was after it was at the end of a fight, really. One of the fights that Hatem spoke about in the lead up to it, where one of the warm up fights where he won, and then he goes on this rant in his post-match interview. Everyone talks about the eating the children line, but the line I loved was when he said basically he's Sonny Liston, he's Jack Dempsey, his defense is impregnable, no one can match him. And I thought, right, I really did buy into the hype. That was how good the rant was. And then he had I think they had a fight at a press conference, and he took a bite out of Lewis's leg.
Yeah.
The build up. Rolling around on the floor, both in wearing their suits, it was funny. Most people know anything about boxing didn't give Tyson a chance, really. People that bought into the hype, casual fans maybe thought maybe he could do something. We can't forget the first round. The first round is something else, because the first round, I think Lewis is really, really nervous in the first round and doesn't fight properly at all, doesn't use his height, doesn't use his jab or anything. I don't know what Lewis is doing in this first round, but Tyson came out in the first round, started throwing the jab, and I hadn't seen Tyson throw his jab in years. Right, was throwing the jab, was connecting to Lewis. He actually, if you look at the card, he wins the first round, and he looks really good. He's lucky he rolled back the years. And Emmanuel Stewart, the late great Manny Stewart, who was Lewis's trainer, absolutely rips into Lewis. Had to mention earlier about Tyson's corner in the fight against Holyfield, how they were useless, how they'd been calming down. This is the opposite end of the scale, where Stewart rips into Lewis and fires a rocket up his ass. He's cussing Lewis out in the corner. Motherfucker, what are you doing? Stick to the game plan. We spoke about this, blah, blah, blah. Lewis nods his head. Okay. Second round, he starts using the jab. Tyson can't get anywhere near him, and it's just vicious from then on. It's an absolute brutal beating from the second round to when it ended. And afterwards, Tyson is just a broken fighter. There's a key part where he wipes the sweat off Lewis's face in a very sort of subservient manner. And that alone would kill a lot of Tyson fans, because it's that ferociousness is completely gone. He's like turned from the baddest man on the planet to a teddy bear in the ring who had just been beaten. And yeah, it's sad to see. It was one fight too many. Wasn't in shape for that fight. Shouldn't really be in the ring with Lewis. It's a mismatch. It's similar to Muhammad Ali fighting Larry Holmes. It's on level.
That's a really good analogy, Aaron. You know, it's funny because as fast as Mike Tyson rose, he fell just as quick. So he had a short time period where he was
He was the baddest motherfucker on the planet. He really was. But the thing I want to ask you guys about now, I mean, he basically just, after that, he was done. He had nothing. He couldn't fight anymore. Personal life got worse. Drug abuse got worse. Basically, any addiction you can think of, he was into. But now that he's 50 years old now, his life after boxing, he's been in movies. We didn't talk about the video game. Cuzzy, how do you feel about Tyson now after all this time? I mean, his boxing career has basically been over for years now. How do you feel about him?
For me, the end of his boxing career came at a time, I think towards the end of boxing being a popular sport in this country. When I say popular sport, I mean mainstream sport. While he was at his peak was before pay-per-view. So, you know, everyone knows about Tyson from all generations, both genders, everything. So my mom knows about Tyson. My grandmother knows about Tyson. My grandmother doesn't know about Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao because that's the pay-per-view era. So in terms of pop culture and legacy, he's one of the most famous names, you know, on the planet, really. As I said, before pay-per-view, so you know, you could wait up, and the whole sort of most of the population who's got television can watch his championship fights. I think the fight with Bruno was on ITV, I think, at the time. But ITV is like our version of CBS or one of those sort of mainstream channels. You don't have to have cable to watch it. So you know, so his main fights were in everyone's living room. This is sort of before we're getting into sort of the Hollywood fights where that was pay-per-view. So his peak, everyone sort of around my age group, which is like late 30s, early 40s, would know about. So he'd always have that legacy of being a great fighter for people around my age group. I don't think you can take that away from him. He was champion for 3 years. He was undisputed champion as well. The knockout record, just the ferociousness of his fighting style and his knockout power. He'll always be up there for me as one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best heavyweights. You know, I didn't see the Muhammad Ali era. But you know, I've seen the videos like most other fight fans, but I would put Tyson up there. He'd be in my top, probably in my top five, heavyweights of all time. People that are older than me that have seen guys from the '60s and seventies might think differently, but that's my opinion.
I agree.
In terms of style, you've got the parting in the front of his head. You know, the parting I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every black dude that, in my age group at school had the parting. Everyone went to the barbershop and said, yep, I want the Tyson, please. everyone had a Tyson line in the front of their head. You know, you've got the Nintendo game, Mike Tyson's Punch Out, which I had as well on the old Nintendo. I used to love that game. And so, yeah, for a time, he was one of the most famous guys in the world, really. The sports personality, heavyweight boxing champion of the world back then was huge. A bit different to what it is now. And you had one champion then because he unified the title. So for me, his legacy as a fighter is there. Really complex person. Hard to know what he was about, you know, in terms of his personality. Even the documentary that he did in 2008 on Tyson, where he's sort of in his interviewing himself, really, answering questions and narrating, he's still... When you look at him, you still think this guy's got a lot of demons and really hard to work out. You mentioned the drug abuse and what have you and the mental issues. I think that's definitely there and that definitely plays a part. It's one of the things that makes me, not certain about the rape case as well, because this is a guy who is not stable. So what he's capable of, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, if you're just talking about the fighting style, I think he's fantastic, and definitely I don't get tired of watching his fights on YouTube, put it that way.
All right. Hatem, how about, what's your lasting legacy? I mean, again, he had the 87, I think his game came out. I mean, this is a guy who's a boxer. I mean, how many sports games on Nintendo did they make for professional athletes? I can't remember, but that's an all-time selling game. How do you feel about his legacy, just with the game included?
Well, as Cuzzy said, like at the time in the '80s, being the heavyweight champion of the world was a big thing. So he was known everywhere. And what helped as well is that he didn't always fight in Vegas as well. So he ended up fighting in Japan a couple of times. He ended up, I think he did some wrestling stuff as well, right? I think he did a referee of a wrestling.
Yeah,
Yeah, WrestleMania he did, yeah. I believe.
He got paid quite handsomely for that. I mean, if you look at Floyd, Floyd uses Mike Tyson's troubles as a sort of a benchmark on how not to do it. It's a shame because he's going to be a case study. That's the word I was looking for, case study. I mean, this is a guy who had no bank account at the age of 17 and then probably by the age of 19 had like millions in his bank account. And he couldn't let go of his, he kind of lived a double life. So you can imagine like he had his life with all his showbiz mates and then he had his life with his Brownsville. And he could never separate the two, which is always what got him into trouble. I mean, he did a lot of good things. I mean, he used to hang around with high society, so he was always in the media. So if he was around now, you could just imagine all the papers running all the stuff about him. But his weaknesses were girls, unfortunately. I mean, nobody's going to dispute his boxing ability. So when I say Mike Tyson's my sporting idol, my room's got like signed pictures of him and like I've attended a few of his fights. I love the guy. I mean, as a boxer, as a human, well, as a human being, as from the moral, social thing, I mean, he's made a lot of mistakes, but he's also been fucked over royally by the people he hangs on with. He said himself, he goes, oh, when you're on top of your game, everybody wants to know you. But bit by bit, when he was on the decline, everybody just let him go, just left him alone. They were happy to earn money off him. And that was his problem. He kind of liked being the center of attention. So he'd always buy stuff for people and give cash to people. But in the hope, he probably thought naively that these people would hang around him. But unfortunately, they don't. I mean, Don King, I think he beat up Don King, God knows how many times. But you can see, I think this, I've read about him that he beat up Don King several, like almost on a monthly basis. He used to beat him up. But I mean, but then you look at it, you can say, okay, you know that Don King fucked you over with the trial. Okay. The defense was shit and you know, he was fucking you over before it. But yet when you got out of prison, you went with the Nation of Islam and then you then went with, Don King as your promoter afterwards again. So obviously, I don't know whether Don King had some legal hold over him, but he stayed with him all the way to the end. And Don King does what Don King does. He abuses the shit out of you. And when you're done, he tosses you aside. Muhammad Ali is an example. I mean, I do wish he could have, I mean, he saw Muhammad Ali as his idol and he did say that when he knocked out Larry Holmes, he said that was for Muhammad Ali. I kind of wish that Muhammad Ali could have listened to him a bit more, guided him a bit more, because he didn't have that father figure. Once Cuss went, once Jimmy That's Jacobs right. died of cancer, then Bill Clayton left, and Clayton, sorry. And that, so he needed a guiding figure, but then he's also an adult as well, right? There comes a point when you're an adult and you've got to bear the brunt of your own stuff. I mean, for me, like BT Sports, ESPN, whatever, they all show Tyson fights. I'll never get sick of him, man. Sick of watching the fights. That knockout of, because he alluded to earlier about the Trevor Burbick knockout, one punch knocked the guy down effectively seven times. It was brilliant. It's one of the best knockouts. I'll never ever get sick of doing it. His knockouts of Pinkland Thomas, Larry Holmes. I've done a little bit of boxing myself and like I've tried to do that peekaboo thing, man, because I'm not exactly tall, as because you know you've met me. The peekaboo thing is just like, it's you kind of try and see what he does. And I watch the videos and when I was a kid, I used to watch how he does the uppercut and the butt. It's so hard to do. And he just generated so much power. And if he'd stayed with Rooney, I honestly think, I don't know, man, things are written, but I don't know. His career wouldn't have folded so badly. He was getting worse and worse and worse each fight. Bruno rocked him in their first fight. People forget. There was that famous commentary when the British guy's going, oh, go on, Frank. He actually rocked him.
Oh, he's hurt Tyson. Yeah. Oh, he's hurt Tyson. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, he did rock him. And if Bruno was the boxer, a decent level, but I think Bruno was shocked by it. But that was the beginning of the end. And then, I mean, he was banging cheerleaders before the Douglas fight. I mean,
it was partying big time in Tokyo, wasn't yeah. it?
Massive Douglas fight.
And what's ironic about the Tokyo fight is because he was knocking out everybody in Vegas, the novelty value of Tyson was wearing off. So they said, oh, we'll take it to places and, we'll take it to other places to see, like, because people weren't like attendance figures were like, oh, well, Tyson's going to beat this guy. Oh, there's no point in pay-per-viewing it. There's no point watching it. We'll just watch it later. So he entered, but he's still, I mean, no matter what you say about him, he is still, people like watching him. Whenever he came back, Pete McNeely, like a complete bum, knocked him out a couple of rounds. One of the highest grossing pay-per-view fights ever. I think when he fought Lewis, I think it was one of the highest. It broke the record.
It was the highest.
Yeah, it was the highest until Floyd and De La Hoya. And then Floyd did his own thing. But I mean, it's sad. I mean, he's had a lot of heartache as well, man. I'm glad he's back on his feet, because one of the biggest things that pisses me off about the UK and the Tyson thing is, you know, I said earlier that there was special dispensation for him to fight Julian Francis in Manchester to be allowed in the country. So he was taking his tour that he was doing, you know, the tour that he does in America, his stand-up show. So he was scheduled to come to England, and I managed to get myself backstage passes to the damn thing. And then he had to pull out of it because the UK decided they wouldn't be allowed in the country. I was fuming. That would have been, because I've seen him in the flesh.
What year was that?
It would, the tour. It would have been, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I was going to say, because he still does that tour.
Yeah, he still does it. So at the time, he took it to here. It was going to be at the Hammersmith Apollo. And it would have been, oh man, I was the best, like, so looking forward to it. It would have literally been, I honestly don't know what I'd done if I met him. I'd have been one of those sniveling little school, go, Mike. But he didn't, he wasn't allowed in. And I didn't realize that was the law, because I remember him fighting in Manchester and going, he fought in Scotland and stuff. I was fuming about that. But then.
Yeah, he came to Brixton as well.
Yeah, exactly. when was Brixton? Brixton would have been before that. Brixton would have been at the same.
2000.
Yeah, so yeah, 2000 was at the same time as the Julian Francis fight. So that would have been, I think the fight was in Manchester and he did. I was in Egypt. I was devastated that I wasn't in London at the time. I was fuming. did you go and see him, or did you go and see that?
I was in Brixton. It was crazy though. I did go to see him, but couldn't really see anything of him because it was absolute bedlam. There's about like 2,000-3,000 people in the street, all age groups, grandmas, mums, little kids. This just shows the popularity of the man. I mean, you wouldn't get any of that for any British fighter in Brixton. I mean, it's been gentrified since, but at the time it's predominantly sort of black community, all sort of loving seeing Tyson. They had to whisk him away and put him into the Brixton police station for his own safety, because he was being absolutely mobbed. He grabbed the speakerphone that the riot police use, and leaned out under the windows and was communicating back and forth with the crowd, because at the time Lambeth Council had complained that he was allowed, that the government actually allowed him to come into the country. They were saying, you know, why is a convicted rapist being allowed to come to the country, to come into the borough, to come to Brixton? And but the your everyday man and woman on the street wasn't having any of it. They went to see Tyson, and you know, and he loved the love that he was getting from the crowd. You know, if you watched some YouTube clips on it, and you can see some journalists, you know, asking women, like, you know, but he's a convicted rapist. I mean, why do you love him? They're like, they're not having a bar of it. They're like, no, he's not. You know, love, absolutely adored. You need to watch some clips, Joe. You get to see the how he's sort of revered on this side of the pond in certain communities. I'm not surprised that he's not allowed to come in now, because there's no fight to sell now, is it?
Exactly. So that's special
dispensation he wouldn't get. Yeah.
You know, Floyd came to Brixton a couple of years ago, and like Floyd, self-professed most famous boxer in the world, didn't get any, not even a hundredth of the adulation. In fact,
no,
I think
he's an asshole. That's why.
Yeah, but like, I think he got pissed off because so you walked into a hairdresser and expecting everybody to walk in, and no, he wasn't. The guy, I think some woman goes, "Oh, are you Mike Tyson?" And she got well pissed off.
The thing is, Mayweather is really popular in London specifically. He's really popular.
I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. But
he's really popular over here. He does get more love over here than probably he gets in the States.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize he got that much love in London. And listen, boys, I hate to cut you off. I don't want to do
that.
But we're getting a little late, and I didn't say anything about the pre-pod, but I do have one question, surprise question, and it's got to be a quick answer.
Sure?
I'll go at you first. I'll go at you first, Atem. In their prime, who wins in a fight, Ali or Tyson? Quick answer.
Oh, man, I knew that was – that's the age-old question. I think
– I said it.
Pre-draft.
Pre-draft. Yes.
Pre-draft. Oh God. See, my Ali.
Don't make the countdown. Don't make me do the countdown.
Ali survived the punches of George Foreman, but he also got put down by Joe Frazier. I think if Ali can see out the first six rounds, then Ali wins. If Tyson gets to him, Tyson wins.
No, just one answer. It doesn't. Yes. One answer. No hypothetical bullshit. Tyson or Ali?
I've had this debate with my dad, and it's like that. It's like that hairdresser scene in Coming to America with, like, he's going Muhammad Ali, and I'm going Mike Tyson. He's going. I can't. I would say Ali. You know, I genuinely think Ali because he's cleverer, and he can work him out.
Okay, Kazi.
We're talking about a pre-draft Ali.
In their prime, so the prime
we're talking about a mid-60s Ali versus, I say, a 1987 Tyson.
There you go.
Ali, man. Ali's winning.
Okay. I mean, Ali took Foreman's punches when he was effectively in decline as well, right? He took Joe Frazier's knockout after the draft. I mean, that's the thing.
He took Frazier for 15 rounds, and they just beat each other. So
I don't think Tyson would have the ability to switch styles. It's where it would let him down. That's been his biggest flaw throughout his career.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, listeners. This is why I brought them on. They know everything Tyson much more than I do. But before we go, we're going to do some plugs. Cuzzy, you want to go first?
No plugs really to speak of. I am on the NKS show tomorrow, after the City game. So hopefully I can be another lucky charm again, because every time I've been on that show, we've won the match.
That's so true, actually.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I think that's why Gags are trying to get me on every game now. So hopefully I'm the new heater. So hopefully we can continue that and not jinx it. can we get the win?
I've been meaning to ring up that show for ages, but it's always after a defeat, and I just don't want to sit there and just vent.
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense. What about you?
We'll have an oil field in the new year, I guess, because it's a bit hard getting everybody together. But we're going to do an oil field, probably try and preview the African nations as well. So if anybody knows anything about the African nations, give us a shout as well, because I'll be representing Egypt. We're going to win it anyway. So, and so oil field index. Yeah, that's the only one I'm on at the moment. So, yeah, hopefully in the new year.
Awesome. Good stuff, man. Well, again, I appreciate you guys coming on. And everybody, listen to Anfield Index. There is truly something for everybody. And on that note, that is a wrap on the second episode of the Legends Podcast. I'll talk to you guys soon.
I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. No one can stop me. I'm the best ever.
Like motherfuck all y'all, Mr. Mike Tyson flow, uppercut all y'all, step into my ring bitches, ding ding bitches, click clack bow bow, bing bing bitches, I'm the dream machine, I mean keen vision, I can see through your scene like clear screens, hear me, to a lion you are just, dear me, fear God, fear me, Siri, us, B-Y-M, try.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.